The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism.
Let's return to the koan that we have been discussing, case 25, Yang Shan's sermon from the third seat. Yang Shan dreamed he went to Maitreya's realm and was led to the third seat. A senior monk struck the stand with a gavel and announced, "Today, the one in the third seat will preach." Yang Shan arose, struck the stand with the gavel, and said, "The truth of the Mahayana is beyond the four propositions and transcends the 100 negations. Listen, listen." And then Wu Men's commentary. "Tell me, did he preach or not? If you open your mouth, you're lost. If you cannot speak, then it seems you are stumped. If you neither open your mouth nor keep it closed, you are 108,000 miles off." And then Wu Men's verse. "In broad daylight, under the blue sky, he preached a dream in a dream. Absurd, absurd. He deceived the entire assembly." I find this koan wonderfully resonant for me because it is so reminiscent of the classic anxiety dreams that many of us have had. Perhaps the most classic one is where you dream that you show up for an exam that you haven't studied for. In my case, it was sometimes that I showed up on stage for a play and realized that I hadn't memorized my lines and I didn't even know what play I was in. And sometimes I feel that Sesshin is like that for me. I show up, I don't know what my role is, and I don't even know what this play is about. In our teachers' meeting yesterday, as we were discussing the koan, everybody, to a person, confessed that they have these anxiety moments before they give talks. Sometimes my experience is that I will give a talk like I'm giving this morning, and then afterwards, I have no memory of what came out of my mouth. A dream. Wu Men says, "In broad daylight, under the blue sky, he preached a dream in a dream." Yang Shan preached a dream in a dream? Is that poetic license? I think it isn't. I think that Wu Men is very deliberate when he talks about a dream within a dream. What are we doing here? Well, one thing that we often say to each other is that we are waking up to things as they are. We are waking up to reality, waking up from the dream. And of course, as we all sit here on our cushions, moment after moment, the dreamlike quality of existence becomes so vivid. This moment here and gone, and immediately a memory that's changed and keeps changing. Even the more vivid experiences immediately become assigned to the realm of constantly changing memory. Something as lively as the yoga this morning, that joyful breathing that we did, so alive. Where is it now? What do you remember about it? Hardly there. And the yoga yesterday morning, lost in the mists of memory. Every moment is like this, moving from the now of no length into the past. And so we wake up to just this, to the truth of impermanence, to the truth that everything is like this, that we and everything in our experience is constantly arising and passing away, slipping away, and slipping into the stories that in moments we tell ourselves about a life that actually was never quite lived in the way we remember it. So we wake up to this impermanence, to this recognition that nothing is fixed. Nothing stays the same. Nothing is truly separate. And this is an amazing awakening. As someone once said, this is not nothing. Think about how many of our fellow humans have no inkling of the deepest truth of impermanence, have no inkling of no fixed self, of no separation. And how vital that awareness is for being a human in the world. So we wake up from that dream of separateness and permanence. But what then? So this, just this that we keep talking about, we point to it in so many ways. We've been pointing to it here as putting a hand out and feeling the raindrops, knowing for ourselves whether the water is warm or cold. Just this. But what is the just this that we encounter? Is my just this the same as your just this? Is the just this of Corwin's puppy who puts her paw out into the rain, is her just this of the raindrops the same as your just this of the drops on the palm of your hand? Dogen writes about this beautifully. He talks about the bird in the sky and the realm of the air and the bird ranging far and wide and the fish in the sea and the realm of the ocean and ranging all over the ocean, but neither ranges beyond its realm. None of us ranges beyond our little realms. And so when we encounter just this, we are encountering our own dream within a dream. So my understanding of Yunmen's phrase is that we are all waking up from a dream within a dream. And that offers enormous solace and enormous relief. It offers, at the deepest level, knowing that our certainties about what's right and wrong, our certainties about what's good and bad, we can hold a little more lightly. Our certainties about our own tragic stories, we can hold with a little more tenderness and a little less certainty. Of course. This sense of the dreamlike quality of our lives can also lead to giving up. Well, if it's all a dream within a dream within a dream, what then? No need to do anything. No need to heal this broken world. And of course, that is not our way. But what then? If not giving up, if not throwing in the towel and sitting comfortably here on the cushion, contemplating our navels, what then? Especially when, as Michael reminded us last night, we can't know all the reverberations of our actions. We can't know all the effects of what we do. So how can we begin? Where do we start? And this is where silent illumination can be our guide. Silent illumination, when Yangshan strikes the stand with the gavel and says, listen, listen. He's not just saying, listen to the gavel. He's saying, listen to your heart. Listen to your intentions, to all the intentions that come up, all the ones we're proud of, all the intentions we're ashamed of. Receive it all. Because these intentions are what we can know, what we can discern. And then we can nourish those intentions that we want to live in the world. And that is our way to live within the dream, a life of intention. And a life of what the reading says is drinking the medicine of good views. So, going forward, living in this dream, we live in the way that we can, responding without falling into achievement, speaking without involving listeners, the 10,000 forms majestically glisten and expound the Dharma. So now I'm going to turn this talk over to one of the more majestic forms, David Roshi, who will continue the talk.
Actually, the talk will be continued by the person on the screen in the upper left corner. The second person from the left on the top row will be the one who continues. I hope you know who this is, this mysterious face that looks back at you from the little box, this privileged position. No matter how late I come into the Zendo, I always get to be number two seat saved for you, saved for me. And so we talk and dream and listen and taste and touch together, exploring this great dream. So you should view this fleeting world, the gatha at the end of the Diamond Sutra. So you should view this fleeting world, a star at dawn, a bubble in a stream, a flash of lightning in a summer cloud, a flickering lamp, a phantom and a dream. This wonderful and precious dream. That, as Bob so wonderfully said, appears and disappears, and yet nothing disappears. Your whole life from the moment you were born, from before you were born, all of the past, from the Big Bang onward, does not reside somewhere else. And Maitreya, the Buddha of the future, Maitreya's assembly, is not tomorrow. Tomorrow I'll go to Maitreya's assembly, or maybe I'll do another retreat, and someday maybe I too will be involved at the grown-ups table. But Maitreya's assembly is right here. You have dreamed yourself here. Our wonderful Zen practice and this wonderful tradition, of course, is a dream within a dream. None of these stories are true. None of these descriptions are, in fact, what it actually is. And yet, we use what we have. We learn to use what we have. And the teaching is already a Buddha. Everything you need has always been here. From the very beginning, no mistakes, all mistakes. As we look deeper into our actual experience, this language of a mistake and getting it right, the language of success and failure, the language of now and then, begins to deteriorate. The stories that we constantly tell about ourselves, as Bob said, we begin to see that they are not quite as solid. And then we live in a world that is not what it seems. Nor is it otherwise. I was quite inspired by Mike's sensei's encouragement to samu, caretaking practice. All of this Zen stuff runs the danger of getting philosophical, of beginning to think you need to know something. Nothing necessary to know. The four thises and the three thats may be useful for a while, but it is this willingness to stick your hand out. This morning I went outside and I stuck my hand out to feel the rain, but all there was sunshine. So I thought, oh well. Maybe this sunshine, maybe it's not the rain, maybe they're fooling me. And this practice of taking care, this is the bodhisattva practice that we vow, not because it's a good idea. Of course, it is a good idea. Not because there's some moral imperative that you should, I should help others, but because deep in our human hearts is the beating of the whole universe, and deep in the heart of every human being is this great love and this great knowing. This knowing of the preciousness of life and the brevity of life. We all know this and we all forget it. But in the activity of washing the dishes, of chasing the dust bunnies around the house, whatever it is for you. When we take care of the world, we are taking care of ourself. When we care for our plants, our pets, our friends, we are taking care of ourself. The entire universe is the true Dharma body, as Dogen says. If you're looking for the true Dharma body, bang the gavel, feel what is here, be present. Under the blue sky at midday, a dream within a dream. There are no secret teachings. There is not some Dharma outside of you that you will attain someday. There is no Dharma within you that you will discover someday. But there is this incomprehensible, wonderful, weird, awful, unimaginable, unconstructed, unconceivable, this that is more precious, more precious than anything, because it is everything. Everything you've longed for. Everything you've worked so hard to find. This search, this determination, so important, though not one of your steps leads away from it, unless we set out, unless we leave the familiar, unless we are willing to be uncomfortable, we are stuck. Stuck in the dream that perfectly validates itself. I look out from my eyes, or I say I look out from behind my eyes and I see the world out there, and I see it quite clearly, thank you. To begin to see that what I see is not something out there, but this world that you live in is arising with you, and you are arising with this world. You are the fish and the universe is the water. You are the bird, life is the air. You are life and life is you. There is no separation. And as we settle into this, as our stories deteriorate, as we deteriorate, as we come apart, what we fear the most is actually what we also long for. Killing and giving life, dying and being reborn are not different. In this upside down world of practice, being lost is where we begin. The great I don't know. The emperor says to Bodhidharma, who are you? Who stands in front of me? And the great Bodhidharma, having traveled from India, a wise old man, says to the ruler of the universe, I don't know. I don't know. And when we are released from our knowing when we walk this path and we taste and touch for ourselves, when we give up all ideas of Zen, all ideas of awakening, the world comes to us and you are touched by the world and you touch the world right here. And we swim and we swim all through the vast and endless ocean. We fly and we fly, and there is no end. Thank you. So we'll have our Dharma dialogue now. Bob and I will supply you with correct answers, and Mike and Melissa will try to mislead you. but we'll all engage in what's alive for you, what this are you encountering, and please sit comfortably. Susan.
Thank you for the talk, Bob and David. I don't know how many words, how many sentences you were offering to us, perhaps 10,000, perhaps more. And for me, listening to the talk of both of you, there were moments of a lot of laughter and smiling for me when you were describing certain pictures. But then there was a moment, Bob, when you were offering one question, one sentence. It was one sentence. And this sentence shift something for me. And this was the question, what is it what we are doing here? And I'm asking myself this question, what is it what I'm doing here? Mm-hmm. And yesterday I had moments where I thought, oh, Zen is not for me. I had no idea what I was doing, and still I have no idea. Breath practice, what is breath practice? How to practice breath practice? And it didn't feel good. I didn't feel comfortable. And then this morning, during the sutra service, when we were chanting page 7, and perhaps most of you know better what page 7 is than me, suddenly a lot of tears were coming. And I don't know why they were coming, what is the meaning of it, although my mind wanted to make sense out of it, but I thought, oh, this is what I'm practicing.
Mm. Yeah.
And sometimes all these words, they are just for me too much, too overwhelming, and they are confusing my mind, perhaps on purpose, the teacher are offering it like this. So this is me at the moment with my practice.
Yeah, Susan, I so appreciate that you talking about, so we, you know, so many sentences on and on, the teacher drones on, but what is meant for us, we receive, right? And that sentence, what are we doing here, touches something deep in you. I appreciate you talking about what it's actually like. Sometimes this seems like a bad idea. Why do I think it would be a good idea to go on meditation retreat? And then some other moment, some opening of tears come, everything is here. And we know something we cannot describe, we cannot put into words. Yeah.
And Susan, I love the questions and how disorienting it is. And then I think about what David said about falling apart, that Sesshin is, if we're lucky, offering us the gift of falling apart. And you're saying, hey, I'm coming apart in this moment a bit. And it's scary, and it's not fun, and it's not what we expect. And the nice, secure, fixed selves that we've built, at least we know what they are. So welcome to falling apart.
Yeah, thanks. And Rich.
Well, following up on that, I was going to say that I'm happily deteriorating. sometimes, like for everybody, sometimes koans are kind of, they don't grab me, you know. You'll say, oh, it's a beautiful koan.
Yeah.
But this one, I don't know, it's easy to follow. And I'm just so moved by every, you know, there've been four talks on it and everybody's got a, you know, a different take, but it's something about it. It's just, and having each of you talk, it's so moving. And Bob talking about the, somehow where you ended with the intention, that was very powerful. I keep thinking of, actually, it's in the sutra service, Rebecca Solnit, Hope in the Dark, which is the way I feel sometimes. And she says exactly that. We may never know. And I think in one of her talks, she gives an example, like you go to a protest, you hold up a sign, somebody 15 years younger looks at it. And then, you know, a dozen years later, she does, you know.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm.
So. Yeah. Anyway, I'm just I'm quite moved. So.
Thank you. Thanks so much. Interesting about your response to this koan, because for me it's been one of the ones that's never really spoken to me. It's like, oh yeah, I kind of get it, but I'll go on. And so these times that we dive in here. I think then it opens up for all of us, and the entry point is quite clear and bright, and we're grateful. Yeah, thanks, Rich. Debbie. Debbie, you're muted.
Again.
There you go.
There all you right.
Thank you. Thank you for the talks. There were kernels that touched me in different places. I really want to say that I would not have anywhere near a daily practice, even if it's a few minutes of breath awareness, if it wasn't for all these Buddhism boxes. Like it makes a huge difference. I don't know, my temperament or whatever it is, my ADD, whatever. I just can't do it without you guys. I don't mean that in some kind of impractical way. I mean, very practical. Sorry, I can see my camera froze up again.
Yeah.
I just want to bring also up a little doubt that's been like gnawing at me a little bit. How do you know that you're in the right place? Because there's people like screwing up left and right, like the Pete, you guys wear the rocker shoes and stuff, and it means something, right? I guess, but like then people do these things, like teachers have sex with students, and it's like recent, and there's factions fighting, and like I don't know. I that's my question. I hope it makes sense.
You know, Debbie, that's such a powerful question. I mean, because all this stuff happens, right? The world falls apart and Zen groups fall apart and people disappoint us. And I think what our practice keeps asking us to do is come back to our own experience and where we can to trust that. So for each of us to say, what feels genuine? What feels authentic? What feels trustworthy? And to do that in Sangha, which you're pointing to, saying you couldn't do this by yourself. We get lost by ourselves. So thank you for pointing us to this great koan about discernment, really.
And, you know, I'm so struck by what you're saying, Debbie, because it really relates to what so many people have been saying about not knowing. You know, especially Bob and David this morning in their talks. And when David was talking just now about, you know, this hasn't really been a koan, it's been there one for me, I had the thought, next, Sasheen, we will read the phone book. And because human beings have this great ability to pull meaning out of everything. And so you get a koan, and your job, your task, is to pull meaning out of it for yourself, and then share that meaning with the teacher, and, you know, kind of come to this place together, which is really, like you said, I was so touched by all the Buddhas in boxes. So you show up for sitting, and you're making meaning out of the showing up. And that's all you have to know. You can never figure why this Zoom group, why this Zen group and not some other Zen group, why this religion and not some other religion. I don't know. But if you spend your time dwelling in doubt, you know, like Michael was talking about last night, one of the three pillars of Zen, without also balancing it with faith and commitment, your practice is totally out of balance. If all you ever do when you come into Dokusan is object and say, I don't know, and don't rest in something's going on here. You know, the rain touched my hand, whatever it is, the moving part. And also it's time to show up. Everybody at this session has been showing up before we start. That's really wonderful. There's something that's pulling us. And I would guarantee that if we actually asked everybody to write a paragraph about why you're here, it would be like reading the phone book. It wouldn't really be what we're doing here. So having that commitment and the faith as well as the doubt all mixed together, so important. And in a way, it doesn't matter. Boundless Way Zen, who cares? The Sasheen, who cares? This is where I want to be. And I think all of you, at least right now in this moment, you're here. So that's the proof that you want to be here.
Great. Yeah. Thanks, Debbie. Jesse.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Very good. I'm trying to understand something about Zen Buddhism and what it means to be committed to Zen Buddhism. And I'm wondering if it is just being, with a willingness to grow. And I know you might be inclined to direct me to not having to understand it. And I appreciate that also. But I think it might come down to the word grow. Like, what do you mean by grow? You know? So I also want to add this context to my question is, when we see the mountain for the mountain, and then we come back later and see is something else and not the mountain at all, and these are different growths. When they happen in the order that they happen in, or if they never happen at all, does not matter. It depends on each individual person, which comes down to, that's what I mean by grow, you know? So very general and expansive But just Dean, just as it is, with that willingness, a willingness in life. And I think why I ask is because obviously I like to understand, and it brings me comfort. But there is a togetherness. There is a family that you guys have. So there must be some thread that connects all of you guys. And as I keep coming back, because I will, because I'm so much more comfortable than I was before I came, you know, I'm sure I will learn what that thread is. But for now, the question stands. Is Zen Buddhism generally just being with the willingness to grow? Thank you.
Yeah. Jesse, I'd like to underline what you said about just being. And perhaps if we go take a step back to that, because yes, I mean, growth is what we love and long for. And sometimes there is growth. And sometimes there's decay. And sometimes there's total stagnation. And I think what this way asks us to commit to when we can is being present with whatever is here. And sometimes it's going to feel like growth, and sometimes it's going to feel like decay and everything in between.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Great. Thank you, Jesse. Will.
Thank you, everybody, actually. The thing I have to say changes each time someone speaks, because there are so many teachers on the screen. But Bob and David, I did find the talk very, very moving, very, very touching. It's a couple of things. I don't even know if they're really questions. Maybe they'll turn into questions. One was just, so my experience, you know, it varies. I've done a number of sessions in person and online, and they do always vary. Sometimes it's the way it was for me today, starting this morning, which is that the first day I feel like I'm, you know, really getting into something, and, you know, almost like a kind of trance state or something. And then the second day, all I can think about is work, and I don't know what's going on in the world, and so it's the opposite of what I expect. I find that the distractions and the sort of thinking mind almost rebel. They're like, no, we're not going to just sit here, or you can sit still, but we're going to, you know, make you think about. So that's very frustrating, and it's accompanied by a feeling of anxiety. So I'm trying to sort of rephrase for myself, I think, what Bob just said, which is then the practice becomes, anxiety. Wow. Right? In other words, you just kind of have to, you know, and of course, anxiety has stories about, that hungry ghost is telling you, you know, you might be squandering your life. I bet you're squandering your life. Are you squandering your life? You know, squander, squander, squander. And that gets very stressful, you know. But maybe I should stop there. That's
I love the thread that you are picking up, and sometimes what's happening we really like, and we have the story. Oh, I'm really getting this. You know, I'm. Turns out I'm pretty good at Zen, right? this is. And then something else happens, and as Bob said, well, we don't like it. Oh, well, this. See, I haven't done. You know, and as Susan talked about too. You know, so. Yesterday, not clear. What am I doing today? Clear. The thread that we keep coming back to is beyond preference. Of course, we have preferences, but our Zen is not a mind control. It is not a universe control. I guarantee, you know, the shape of life will continue. 10,000 joys and 10,000 sorrows, there is no escape, right? Zen is not an escape, will not help you or me avoid anything. But we can head directly toward it, and we can discover that it is so far beyond, it is not just what we think. Of course, it is what we think of it, but so much more. And then the world opens up right where we are.
Will, when you were describing the progression of your sesshin, I was just thinking of one of my favorite Zen cartoons. This guy is sitting on his cushion meditating, and he has this thought bubble, and it says, "I really do want to be in the moment, just not this moment."
Wonderful. Okay, we'll do just one more. Bob, last word.
Thank you, everyone, so much. Like Will, what I've had to say has probably changed quite a bit throughout all the other speakers. It's such a beginner's question, but it's just so alive for me right now. I get so stuck on like what Debbie was saying, like what are we doing? It's like am I supposed to be doing something? But it's not doing nothing. I don't know. I guess I came into the weekend having a story about there was some peg I was going to find, and I'd pull it out and replace it with something.
That's great. Yeah.
But it's just sitting here. There's no thing here. And, you know, I'm going to go back out into the world and have all of the, you know, the constellation of my life and my story, and, you know, nothing will have happened. But I just have such a strong sort of desire to sort of replace the pegs of my story.
Yeah, so you haven't found the peg. I'm so sorry. No, I love that image. You know, we come in thinking, okay, there's something, and I'm willing to work hard, and I'm going to get it.
Right? Yes.
And the good news and the bad news is that there's nothing to get. Right? Because we so think there is. Right, this search for the peg is under from the assumption that there is something else, and so this possibility of not much happening. Can you tolerate this in a world full of entertainment and in the narrative that we want to create about ourselves, the dream of Zen? I'll get a raksu. I'll do this. I'll be, you know. That's not Zen. Zen is exactly what you're encountering. Oh, I had some preconceived notions. I didn't even know I had that. And so as they slip away, as they slip out of my fingers, can I sit here in the middle of deterioration of certainty? Can I sit without reaching for this or that? Yeah, wonderful. Thank you so much. We're gonna stop here, but we'll take a few breaths, and then we'll move into walking meditation.